Greetings from the voice of Allan Kardec.
And welcome from the voice of the spirits.
We are here once again to take you on another small journey through the Spirits book by Allan Kardec. Today we will continue with the introduction covering sections 14 and 15.
Enjoy.
Section 14. We will pass right over the objection of certain skeptics who point out the spelling errors of some spirits if it did not provide us with an essential observation. We must agree that their spelling is not always flawless, but only a lack of reasonable arguments could make such a fact the target of serious criticism by stating that if spirits know everything, they should know how to spell. We could point out numerous sins of this nature committed by earthly scholars, which in no way lessens their authority. However, the matter involves a more serious issue. For spirits, and especially for high-order ones, the idea is everything. The form is nothing. Freed from matter, their speech is as rapid as thought, and it is through thought itself that they communicate with one another without intermediary means. Thus, they must find it very inconvenient having to use the drawn-out and cumbersome forms of human language, especially its insufficiency and imperfections, in communicating with us to express all their ideas. They themselves have alluded to this fact, and it is interesting to observe the means they utilize to minimize the inconvenience. The same would apply to us if we had to express ourselves in a language composed of longer words and sentences and containing fewer expressions than ours. It is the same type of difficulty that geniuses experience. They become impatient with the slowness of the pen, as it always lags behind their thought. Thus, we can understand why the spirits attach little importance to the orthographic trivialities, especially when dealing with a profound and serious teaching. On the other hand, is it not marvelous that they can express themselves equally well in all languages, and that they understand them all? We must not conclude from this, however, that they do not understand the conventional correctness of language, since they observe it when necessary. For example, the poetry they dictate almost always defies the criticism of the most demanding purist, in spite of the ignorance of the medium. Section 15. There are still individuals who see peril everywhere and in everything that they are unfamiliar with, and there is no lack of those who have drawn unfavorable conclusions about Spiritism from the fact that some individuals have become so involved in studying it that they have lost their minds. But how could reasonable people accept this argument? Does the same not happen with all intellectual pursuits when the mind is weak? How many lunatics and maniacs have been produced by the study of mathematics, medicine, music, philosophy, etc.? Should we therefore ban studying them? What does that prove? Through physical labor, one can injure one's arms and legs, the instruments of physical action. Through mental labors, one can injure the brain, the instrument of thought. However, even if the instrument is broken, the spirit is not. It remains intact. Once freed from matter, it will again enjoy the fullness of its faculties. In its field and as an individual, it is simply a martyr to its work. All great intellectual pursuits may cause madness. The sciences, the arts, and even religion have all supplied their contingents. Insanity has an organic predisposition of the brain as its primary cause, making it more susceptible or less so to certain impressions. Whenever this predisposition exists, it shows up in a person's main preoccupation, turning it into a fixation. It may be about spirits for those who occupy themselves with that particular subject. It may involve God, angels, the devil, fortune, power, the arts, a science, motherhood, or a political or social theory. Victims of religious insanity would probably become insane spiritists if spiritism were their predominant preoccupation, just as insane spiritists would express their madness under other forms if the circumstances were different. I therefore state that spiritism is not especially privileged in this respect. However, I will go even further and state that spiritism, rightfully understood, is a safeguard against insanity. Among the most frequent causes of cerebral overexcitement, we should count disappointments, misfortune, and broken hearts, which are all the most frequent causes of suicide. But true spiritists see the things of this world from a much higher point of view. They seem tiny and petty to them in light of the future awaiting them. Life is so short and fleeting that its troubles seem like nothing more than the unpleasant incidences of a journey. Things that in other individuals would produce violent emotions affect spiritists but little, for they know that life's sorrows are trials that lead to advancement if they endure them without complaining, and that they will be rewarded according to the courage with which they have borne them. Their convictions give them a resignation that safeguards them against despair, a frequent cause of insanity and suicide. Furthermore, through spirit communications, spiritists know the fate of those who intentionally shorten their days, and that picture is sufficient to make them stop and think. Thus, the number of those who have been deterred at the brink of that deadly precipice is considerable, one of the results of spiritism. The incredulous can laugh all they want. Nevertheless, I wish for them the same consolation spiritism has provided to all those who have put forth the effort to probe its mysterious depths. Among the causes of insanity, we must also include fear. For instance, fear of the devil has deranged more than a few minds, and who knows the number of victims whose weak imaginations had been impressed by the threat of the devil, a threat which becomes even more terrifying through hideous details. Some say that the devil, as well as the boogeyman and the werewolf, is only used to frighten children in order to make them behave. However, when these children no longer fear the devil, they become naughtier than ever. In trying to control their behavior, those who use such stories do not take into account the mental health risk of scaring such delicate minds. Religion would be quite weak if a lack of fear were to compromise its power. Fortunately, it is not the case. Religion has other ways of acting on souls, and spiritism could furnish it with highly effective and serious tools if religion knew how to utilize them. Spiritism shows the reality of things and thus neutralizes the dreadful effects of exaggerated fear.